Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Well, 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 looky here. Romney picked Ryan. That's a surprise, actually. Beyond the interesting little factoid that this means, for the first time in America's history, there is not at least one Protestant on the ticket. Romney's a Mormon, Ryan's a Catholic. It suggests Romney is either, one, very serious about connecting with the conservative side of his party, or two, he actually is serious about moving this country back toward our founding principles, and that this means the same thing to Romney that it means to us. Ryan has solid conservative credentials, but he does not come without baggage, and we'll unpack that baggage today. Did you hear about that homosexual group that is suing Chick-fil-A because its president expressed an opinion about their lifestyle, a personal belief? Maybe we should sue Starbucks, eh? Well, no. We believe people actually have a right to disagree with us. We're not like those bigots who want to control what people think and believe. You know that the Chick-fil-A owner never intended to position his company on this issue. Santa Barbara, are you listening? He was merely stating his personal opinion on a social issue when asked about it. I hope Chick-fil-A will just sue some sense into Santa Barbara. Well, anyway, he was merely stating his personal opinion on a social issue when asked about it. The problem we have with Starbucks and Home Depot and Penny's and Office Depot, for that matter, is they go out of the way to identify their brand, their corporate identity in the community with the perverse and disease-ridden lifestyle of the homosexual community. I intended to give my formal decision as to a boycott of Starbucks, Home Depot, Penny's, and Office Depot, but got carried away last week with other issues and didn't get to it. Let's take care of it right now. I deeply appreciate all of you who have already taken my CD. I think we've had more than 50 hits on our brain massage website alone, several from our church congregation and so on. I think we're on the right track here, and I'm going to create a new one you'll like even better. But real quick, after much thought, counsel, and prayer on the matter, I think aggressively educating the managers and employees of these stores and the community around them with what they're supporting, I think that's the way to go. And what will happen will be a natural boycott. I say let's educate these folks and then they'll decide for themselves whether or not they want to shop there. Of course, they decide that anyway if you do call for a boycott. Did you hear about the latest effort to terrorize Christians? Yeah, you heard about that LGBT sympathizer who went into Focus on the Family's headquarters and opened fire? He had a backpack stuffed with a bunch of Chick-fil-A sandwiches, told the guard, quote, I don't like your politics, end quote, and then shot him. Funny, we don't hear much about it. And even funnier, none of the homosexual activist groups are running to the microphones to denounce this fellow. Thank God he didn't get more than a wound on his wrist. But he stopped that guy from killing about 50 people. Looked like that's what he was planning to do. With this in mind, let's touch on the conspiracy theories developing around the Aurora, Colorado theater massacre, the Joker conspiracy. You are probably not surprised to learn that conspiracy theories are popping up around the Joker massacre at a Colorado theater. What I find interesting is that, as you know, MSM, Brian Ross, and Stephanopoulos both attempted to tie the Tea Party to the Joker massacre. So now the question is, will the MSM bother to look into the allegations that James Holmes was connected with a group called Black Bloc, which is identified with the Occupy movement? Will they even dare suggest such a thing? Remember how the MSM ran out there with the news that they found a James Holmes recently identified with the Tea Party movement? Of course, it turned out this was not the same James Holmes who dyed his hair orange, entered a theater through an exit door, dressed in black tactical riot gear, complete with gas masks, which, with regard to everything except the gas mask, happens to, well, they even use gas masks, don't they? That's right. I've seen some pictures of black bloc members in the Occupy movement pulling their mischievous rioting and vandalism dressed in exactly that way. Isn't that interesting? Did Ross know that there was another James Holmes who posted a promotion of the Occupy movement on YouTube? Why didn't he offer the suggestion that this just might be the James Holmes who went all Joker in the Colorado theater? One element of the Joker conspiracy theory suggests Holmes did not act alone. And another, ties in with it, is that this was a planned action of a violent Occupy fringe group called Black Bloc. Holmes' actual plot, it is believed, beyond instigating terror and destabilizing society, as every good KOist would try to do, was to kill as many police officers as possible when they entered his booby-trapped apartment. Killing cops is the mantra of the Black Bloc group. I'm looking here at a picture of a Black Bloc gal wearing a scarf over her lower face, covering her identity, or hiding her identity, and carrying a sign that reads, quote, "All my heroes kill cops," end quote. Conspiracy theorists tell us that witnesses and physical evidence support the conclusion that more than one person was involved in the incident. Now, you know, witnesses can sometimes be confused. One guy noticed that the smoke canisters came from different parts of the room. Well, I can't determine whether or not he testified these cans were launched simultaneously. Holmes was moving through the dark room, after all, throwing the cans as he moved, and that could account for what he saw. Then there's the recording of dispatch communications with police on the scene that shows they were chasing down multiple suspects. In all that confusion, no doubt anyone behaving like a suspect or even looking like one would be of interest to the police. A lot is made of the apparent differences between the two pictures of the suspect, one from when he posed for his university picture and the other a mugshot taken by the police. But people can look very different at different angles, different lighting, different times, different decades, different camera settings, different distance from the subject. I mean, on and on. Different center, different moods. All. Nevertheless, the police have matched the suspect's fingerprints that were taken when he purchased the weapons to those of their suspect, have they not? And that to the weapons and or rigging and to the apartment, right? I mean, surely. I suppose if the guy confessed, they might overlook all this, right? Not likely. I mean, did they fingerprint this guy and then cross-check those prints with the ones on file when he purchased those weapons? I would assume they did. And so the squabble about whether they have the shooter is silly, in my view. However, there are a few things that point to the conclusion, or at least the strong suspicion, that he did not act alone. One of these is the extra gas mask they found outside on the street. I mean, the shooter was wearing one when they apprehended him. And then they found another one lying on the street outside the theater. Who goes to a theater with a gas mask? Could this have been his accomplice, who, when it was all over, or when it went down, he in flight threw the gas mask away so as not to bring attention to himself? Also, one witness said that just before all the chaos started, he noticed someone come to the row where he was sitting, receive a phone call, and then proceed to the exit, presumably to take the call. Was that a signal to open the exit door so the shooter could get in? That is how he entered the theater, we understand. Or was that call to alert the shooter that his weapons and riot gear had been delivered by an accomplice? And talk about his gear. I understand this guy was in school on some sort of government grant, $27,000, I believe it was. And however, he was receiving this in monthly allotments of $1,700 per month. ABC, NBC, and CBS all reported that he had upwards of $16,000 in equipment. I mean, including everything, bomb-making equipment, the whole business, the guns, the riot gear, all of it. They also reported that he acquired this material over a period of from 7 to 8 months, beginning back in December of 2011, continuing through July of 2012. Now, how does a starving student put out $16,000 for weaponry and riot gear? I mean, his rent alone would have eaten up at least a third of that, and he had to eat something over the eight-month period. So let's say he put out over $1,000 a month or about $1,000 a month into his weapons buildup. Well, that doesn't come close to the $16,000 necessary to buy the stuff he had. All this suggests he did not operate alone. And there is no question that his motif was indeed eerily like that of Occupy Black Bloc members. So, yeah, I think it's a reasonable question. But I want to announce that there is not any sufficient proof that James Holmes, the Colorado shooter, is the James Willis Holmes identified with the Occupy movement who posted the Keep Love Alive video on YouTube. So there. I'm not buying, and I warn you to be wary about getting sucked into the conspiracy thing here. One thing that makes the idea questionable is that, well, it hasn't appeared on the Drudge Report yet. Is America preparing for civil war? Are events like the theater massacre, the earlier Colorado massacres, the recent attack at Focus headquarters, are these things all part of developments leading up to a total breakdown in civil order that can be used as a pretext to declare martial law? Or is there a civil war brewing in this country? You've heard about the 6 black teenagers who randomly, we're told, attacked a man walking home. They beat him very nearly to death. Yeah, these kids were 13 to 14 years old, and we're told they were just bored and beat this guy up for no other reason than that they were bored. Why would these kids do this? Are all these things harbingers of a coming civil war? The editors at Washington Times want to know if the government is preparing for civil war. Really? They report that high-ranking military personnel are seriously discussing scenarios like Tea Party extremists taking over a city and the U.S. military being called in to attack them. An article I have here titled Full Spectrum Operations in the Homeland, A Vision of the Future, appeared in the respected Small Wars Journal, in which the authors call on military leaders to, quote, consider the conduct of operations on U.S. soil, end quote. The Times calls it, quote, an operational laydown to present the rationale and mechanisms for Americans to fight Americans, end quote. Now, 20 years ago, Lieutenant Colonel Dunlap created a buzz when he published an article titled, quote, The Origins of the American Military Coup of 2012, end quote. Now, pause a moment here and reflect that this was written in the early 1990s. The colonel attached a disclaimer to his article, claiming the coup he envisioned was a literary device and not a prediction. And now, in 2010, the Army published TRADOC pamphlet 525-3-1. Now, that's a U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command pamphlet, 52531. This pamphlet is titled The United States Army Operating Concept for 2016 through 2028. So in 2010, the Army was projecting what issues it might face in the 12-year period beginning in 2016 and exploring what preparations were needed to be made to address them. So what is interesting about 2016, beyond the fact that Hillary Clinton declined an offer to replace Biden on the Obama ticket, because she does plan to run for the office in 2016, but does not want to be tainted by the hard left legacy of Obama or be tarred with his failure if he loses. This document argues for the need to prepare the military for action against Americans. That's unnerving. Lately, Colonel Benson teamed with Civil War expert Jennifer Weber, both of Kansas University, to publish an article presenting a hypothetical coup initiated by extremist Tea Party types, of course, in which the military is called into action against Americans. To the credit of the editors at Washington Times, they objected to the scenario. Unfortunately, their objection was not because it unfairly targeted Tea Party people and insinuated without justification that they are prone to domestic terrorism. Rather, they objected because they feared such a response to a Tea Party takeover of a town would create a backlash and breakdown of confidence in government. And, folks, it's getting weird out there. Then we have this report. The Social Security Administration is purchasing 174,000 bullets, hollow point bullets, by the way. Now, running this down, I discovered that the SSA has its own sort of police force. Yeah. And that seemed odd to me. Why would the SSA, Social Security Administration, have an armed police force? Shouldn't this come under the jurisdiction of our local police? Or in certain matters, the FBI? And this is curious. When they were asked whether or not the amount of bullets they purchased was an unusual amount over prior years, they declined to answer. See? And I understand the Army is acquiring riot gear in anticipation of what? Civil unrest in the near future here in this country? And the need for the military to intervene in civil matters? Well, the bottom line, my friend, before I go to break, is this. We had better take 2 Chronicles 7:14 seriously, my fellow Americans, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land. I'll be right back.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If you find yourself suddenly feeling like someone turned on a bright light inside your head, and this is followed by a sense of euphoria, described by some as a feeling that you have just been enveloped into the warm and comforting embrace of the truth, then you are a lights on listener. However, if you experience sudden bursts of rage, uncontrolled trembling of the lower lip, sweaty palms, and mental disorientation, then you are definitely a lights off listener. Now that you know what symptoms to look for, call 888-770-8000 and leave your message. Is it lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. The pastor is ready to receive your message. Your brain massage will continue in a moment.
Church is not the place to be trolling for chicks, and it's not a talent show for rockers. So if you want a rock concert, call Ticketmasters. But if you're looking for a church that takes the Lordship of Jesus seriously, and you can endure sound doctrine proclaimed straight from the Bible with the preaching that tells it like it is, without fear or compromise, come to the Lighthouse, where we are shining the light of God's truth to help families safely navigate through the moral storms of our day. Call 347-9887 for more information. See our ad in the Coastal Pages Directory.
Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air,
The devil beware. Pastor Scheinbach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind men's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Warning, Pastor Scheinbach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheinbach, Blame the Sewer, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Hey, Romney chose Ryan. Ryan gives all the conservatives a reason to support the GOP ticket that goes beyond the overarching concern that we stop the Soros wrecking ball called Obama. He can articulate conservatism clearly because it is who he really is, and we trust this is a harbinger of how Romney will govern and that it is a forecast of the direction in which he will take this country if elected. But what about Ryan's baggage? And he does have some. Here's an article that asks whether conservatives will attack Ryan over his support for TARP, the GM and Chrysler bailouts, the AIG vote, and his support for INDA, the Patriot Act, and the influence of Rand upon his thinking. I've said that Ryan has been consistently guided by conservative principles. Now, how can I say that in view of these things? Well, is it because I, like many of my fellow God-fearing patriot conservatives, am desperate to find some excuse to vote for the GOP ticket since it is becoming increasingly clear it's the only alternative to another 4 years of Obama, and which would be the certain ruin of our constitutional republic? Have the liberals in the GOP beaten us down? Have they worn us out? Well, maybe. But at least in order to pull this off, they had to bring on board a clear-headed conservative. So there. We can only guess what sort of running mate Romney might have chosen if he had not had met with such a strong challenge from those in the GOP whose heart is on their right hand. A bit obscure for some of you, perhaps. A little Bible humor there. The Ryan pick goes a long way toward capturing the support of the conservatives. I definitely think this does bode well for November, but remember, Ryan was sufficiently malleable to be recruited to support TARP and those early bailouts. So let's look at Ryan's position on these things, shall we? Looks like we'll get at least three or four of them in. Let's begin with TARP, shall we? And I'll allow Ryan to speak for himself. I'll take some excerpts out of his response to this, to a question about his position on TARP in a recent interview. Quote, "I believe we were on the cusp of a deflationary spiral, which would have created a depression. If we would have allowed that to happen, I think we would have had a big government agenda sweeping through this country so fast, we wouldn't have recovered from it." And then what he says essentially is that in order to prevent our fundamental conservative principles from being kind of wiped out for a generation, he thought he should vote for TARP. Now, you might, like me, disagree with Ryan on this, but my point is that his decision was guided by its conservative values and principles. Let's look at the auto bailout. First, Ryan has been consistently against using taxpayer money to bail out industry. He voted against a $25 billion fund created within the Energy Department for the auto companies, but that bill passed anyway. And so there was a $25 billion allotment allocated to the auto industry sitting in the Energy Department already. Well, later he voted for an auto bailout, a bill that would allow the money that was in that fund to be dispersed to the auto industry to help it out of its malaise. Now, why would he vote for that? Well, he explained it this way. Quote, "The president's chief of staff, Josh Bolton, I believe it was, made it extremely clear to me before the vote, either the auto companies get the money that was put in the Energy Department for them already, or the president was going to give them TARP with no limit on how much they could get," see, end quote. Ryan reasoned that he did not want the auto industry to tap into TARP, so he decided to go along with voting to release the Energy Department money because it was already there, and at least that would keep the auto industry out of TARP. Well, that vote failed, and the auto industry got into TARP anyway, and Ryan said, and this is insight on his thinking about TARP, by the way, as well, quote, "Well, where are we now? What I feared would happen did happen. The bill failed, and now they've got $87 billion from TARP, money we're not going to get back," end quote. And he explained that his frustration with this, that now we have TARP as a precedent established by the Bush administration, and which the Obama administration has turned into a slush fund. end quote. All right, so that gives you some insight into his thinking. And then there was this vote for the AIG thing. And this was the bill that put a punishing tax on the CEOs of companies taking TARP money and then receiving exorbitant bonuses. Well, the problem here is that everyone would agree that it's wrong for these CEOs to take taxpayer money to bail out their failed companies and then to turn around and take huge multi-million dollar bonuses for themselves. Even in cases where those bonuses were part of their contract, that TARP money, when you're mingling government taxpayer money in all this, it becomes messy. It shouldn't be used in that way. And I think everybody would agree with that. On the other hand, fundamentally, the government has no business getting into the business of these companies in the first place, which takes us back to the TARP question. And that decision is really the problem here. In any event, Ryan frankly admits his vote was a mistake. So I'm just going to quote what Ryan said about what he called the AIG thing. The whole AIG thing, he said, quote, you know, that was, you know, I obviously regret that one. I was angry at the time because I was worried that all these companies were jumping into TARP, thinking they could use TARP as a way to beat their competitors, as a way to get cheaper credit, to get money at cheaper rates, and at the expense of their smaller competitors, by the way. And so I was seeing TARP as a sort of a new tool of crony capitalism, and I thought it'd be a good signal to send to the large banks who were jumping into this thing, who really didn't need it, to stay away from this, don't get in bed with the government, even though it might, in the short term, give you a leg up on your competitors. You'll be burned. And that was what was running through my mind at the time, given the fact that we had about 6 hours' notice on that vote, and our lawyers were telling us that it was not a bill of attainder. I close my quote there for a moment. I need to explain bill of attainder, perhaps, for some of my audience. And Republicans were concerned that this bill before them, that AIG thing, was an act of legislation that declared a certain class of persons criminals after an act without benefit of a trial. Now, that's what a bill of attainder does. This bill was a bill of attainder. It classified these CEOs as criminals and punished them for their acts without benefit of trial, and before there was any law saying they couldn't do it. Now, it seemed to me the bill was exactly that. And a few weeks later, by the way, it was admitted. Ryan goes on, quote, now, when a week went by and our lawyers had a chance to read it more clearly and carefully, they reversed their opinion of the bill and said it was, in fact, a bill of attainder, which therefore should not have passed, end quote. That tells you why this business of rushing bills through Congress is bad news. Anyway, as you can see, whether or not you agree with his conclusion, when you know all the ins and outs of these things, you begin to see what these guys are up against. But in my judgment, Ryan reasoned consistently from within his conservative values and principles, even if occasionally he misstepped in his conclusions. And you can do that. That happens. Personally, I believe Ryan should never have compromised on TARP. I think he should have trusted God, not the manipulative political maneuvering to address the problems that concerned him. TARP was wrong-headed because and when he did it, it trapped him, really. It forced him or pushed him or maneuvered him into the next step and the next step and the next step. And the thing that saves it for me, you know, let me use an analogy for this. I play chess. Now that I've said that I'm going to be challenged by every chess player out there, gunslinger out there who hears me. So I need to say I play purely for entertainment. I am not a serious student of the game. Anyway, I know how important it is that you set up your game in the beginning moves to avoid having your opponent get the initiative. If you're playing an able chess player, once they get the initiative, they can use it to maneuver you into a position that the only moves you have are bad ones. And once that happens, you're making choices between bad moves, you're likely going to lose the game. Now imagine a situation where you're called upon to take over another guy's game, and that's what you sit down to. All right? Well, that's what our Tea Party guys face when they arrived on the Hill. And I say Ryan has done an extraordinary job picking his moves. Once he went with TARP, he was trapped. And here's the thing. I'm absolutely convinced that if Ryan gets an opportunity, and we can give him one by voting for this ticket, he will outmaneuver those Democrats and put them on the defensive, regaining the initiative on the board. And finally, what about this? I have to close it up. Let's take a look at his admiration for Ayn Rand. I warned you of the dangers of Rand's godless free market economics and of godless patriotism, generally speaking. I'm writing a book under that title. And I was repeating and repeat many of the same warnings our founders sounded so long ago with regard to godless patriotism. You've noticed a great number of conservatives have found favor with Ayn Rand. They are responding to her emphasis on individuality, freedom of the marketplace, personal initiative, the reward for the wise application of hard work, ingenuity, knowledge, resources to build wealth. However, Rand is godless, and her pragmatic approach to ethics will not sustain a free enterprise system. You see, when you're writing a book or writing a script, you can make it turn out any way you want it to. But in real life, that's not the way it works. A godless society invariably degenerates into some form of oppression. Usually anarchy and or tyranny, or a little bit of both, or a swing back and forth between the two. Ryan has made it clear. He rejects the aspects of Rand's philosophy that are inconsistent with his Christian worldview. So I conclude that Paul Ryan consistently reasons from within his conservative core values and beliefs, even if occasionally he makes errors in his conclusions. And listen, I'll take a guy who has the right values and right beliefs and is sincerely committed to them over the alternative anytime. And more often than not, Ryan lands straight up on his feet on conservative ground. So I support Paul Ryan, and I think Romney showed some promising business acumen in picking Ryan as his running mate. So this is a score for Romney in my book. Now, I've lit the lamps in the Church Belfry Arch, and now you let me know if you see that they are on. Say lights on if you see that the lights are on, and you will ride like Revere and spread the warning. Essentially, it means you agree with what I'm saying. And if you don't agree, you call and say lights off. And that means you reject what I'm saying and perhaps disagree very strongly. And you can leave us along a message as you like. And I'd like to hear from my audience. So what will it be today, lights on or lights off? Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. That number again is 1-888-770-8000 or 888-770-8000. 888-70. Oh, no. I know. Anyway, you might remember said it at 77 Sunset Strip. I don't know why that popped into my brain. Leave a message for me on our listener response hotline, 888-770-8000, a free call to anyone within the continental United States from outside the country. Or for those who prefer it, you may email me by going to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com. Click the Contact Us button. Use thebrainmassageshow.com. Click on the Contact Us button. And then select Lights On or Lights Off and write me a message. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If after 5 minutes or less of Pastor Scheidbach's brain massage, sounds like these begin involuntarily emanating from your throat, you are a lights off listener suffering liberal colic syndrome. On the other hand, if this sound rises in your heart at the sound of Pastor Scheidbach's voice, you are a lights on listener reveling in the light of truth, justice, and the American way. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com for an archive of great brain massage shows that you can download and distribute to others free of charge. If you want to give us a gift to help with broadcasting costs, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and click on the donate button. Or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. and go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is waiting to massage your brain with scintillating insights.